Hello, friends. This is Against Everyone with Connor Abib. This time, I'm going to be just talking about true and false spiritual paths. I think there are so many spiritual paths right now, so much misdirection, and so many spiritual influencers who are making things worse. And it's really important to get a spiritual anchor and some spiritual direction in this time. So I'm going to see what I can do to help with that. On this episode, I'm going to talk about why it matters now, why there's more interest in spiritual guidance and information, then how it's happening, the forms these paths are taking, including paths forged by what I call the bad friend, the bad friend to spirituality, who is worse than the enemy to spirituality now, I think, in a lot of ways, the many forms that false spiritual paths take, and then some indications of the true paths and the true forms. All right, here we go. So right off the top here, I want to say, this is not about condemning anyone, which is why I'm not really naming some figures here. Although I have, of course, seen people and even people I know enact bad spiritual moves, and I have myself. So what? The spiritual path is the hardest thing any of us can do. Being human is extremely difficult, particularly in this moment when so much is changing. I'm also not fully condemning any tradition. A lot of traditions, which I see as mostly composed of falsehood or that have turned into false paths over time, can, in the hands of the right person, be illuminated. So nothing is beyond being used to express a true spiritual path. And furthermore, spiritual development is not a straight line of progress. In fact, one aspect of true spiritual development is that on a true spiritual path, what you go through on one leg of that path actually does not equip you to deal with the next step in any obvious way. Finally, many of the bad paths have been exacerbated by COVID, by lockdowns, and the global trauma that so many of us went through, but so few of us are willing to talk about. It was a time when everyone was trying to figure out what was going on, and so many people in their theorizing did deep damage to their psyches, or their reputations, or their credibility. These events represent a largely unprocessed trauma. I don't like that word because it's not exactly what it is, but trauma is close to being a good word for it. Even if you don't personally feel like you were affected by the events of the past few years, they were global events that affected everyone else, so they did affect you. When world events like that happen, it takes time to get bearings. And it's just been a very short period of time since that happened. For people in the English-speaking world, all of that dovetailed with fascist-adjacent governments, or just fascist governments, new policy decisions like Brexit that had already knocked people off balance, and so forth. So it's important to see all that, and like I said, to see that so little time has passed. We are just emerging. Many people are still wearing masks. Many people are in hospitals. A lot of people are afraid of what will happen next, afraid of getting sick again. So I want to be clear that I'm not making statements about any of those events other than to say that they have affected us, and that includes affecting the spiritual landscape, and that they're all still being processed. The one aspect of those events that matters for my discussion here is the humility that happens in the face of global events. We feel ourselves in the sway of these events that include all of us. It can make us feel humiliated. I don't mean in an embarrassed way, but I mean in a way that connects us with being, that kind of humility. this humility and its offerings affect everything, and it definitely gives rise to spiritual theorizing and trying to find a coherent center. And so does the refusal of the humility. People who are or were committed to being spiritual resistance warriors, who have not faced or encountered that lesson of humility, who are only committed to identifying with and fighting against policies, or, I mean, on the flip side, people who are over-identified with the sense that it was their job to keep everyone in line with whatever policies were handed down by officials, I think we didn't see accepting the lesson of humility there either, and in some cases, it's still not happening. Humility is always a spiritual lesson, and often a painful one. I'm not cheerleading for the sense of being humiliated or ground down or any of the horrible things that happen to people, but rather stating that the lessons of humility, not just its shadows, were offered to us in the past few years, and the people that accepted that and got it are in a lot of ways in a better position to talk about true spiritual paths. Let me examine a little more of the world events that are happening. I don't need to go over the world's problem in details, but I mean, here's a list. Labor exploitation, the challenges of social media, surveillance, of course, COVID, like I mentioned, environmental catastrophe, LGBT people under threat, pollution, hyperdevelopment and housing crises, police brutality and murder, wars, the refugee crisis, the Supreme Court in the U.S. just going bonkers, a senile U.S. president, a political system that is a two-party political system in the U.S. that seems to have no way out, NATO and the threatening of neutrality, nuclear holocaust, wildfires and smoke in the air, flooding, UFO hearings, the rise of fascism, the threat of AI, mass shootings and public shootings, recessions, cop cities. I mean, I could go on and on. Importantly, we are seeing that this is all happening. Why do I say that? Well, we've always had many, many problems, and in many eras. And this is something that has been pointed out so often that it's almost not even worth repeating, but in many different eras, people have thought they were facing the real and true end of the world, and they weren't. And even knowing that fact can't stop us from declaring in the face of all those problems I listed. But yes, this is the real, real end this time, because we have a new way of seeing now that makes us feel quite different. Part of that new way of seeing is being able to see globally, being able to see all those problems in the world, on the planet, happening at once, and feeling planetary problems. This isn't a dismissal of any of those concerns. I understand it's all frightening, and maybe even hearing that list made you feel frightened, or some item on that list made you sweat a little bit. Since we can see all those problems happening at once, it's natural to think of them as entangled and to try to come up with a unifying theory of their entanglement. And it's also easy to come up with counters to that argument, that they're not actually entangled, and that seeing them entangled is conspiratorial nonsense. What people are doing more and more is trying to figure out, given all of that, what it means to be alive in this time, to be a human being in this moment. And that has been a huge part of the rise of the spiritual influencer and of the longing for coherence that is lended or given by spirituality. This isn't a bad impulse. It's a good impulse. When we see problems of the world, we can turn to ourselves and say, what is it about us, about human beings in this time? And what is it about me that is contributing to all of this, or seeing it correctly or incorrectly? There are, however, good and bad ways to encounter and handle this impulse of turning inward. And we're being flooded with so many different approaches of how to handle it. Here's another quick list. There are spiritual YouTube channels and podcasts. There are books on spirituality for Marxists. There is the rise of the spiritual influencer, not just people that are talking about abundance and manifestation, but influencers who are actually telling us how to view reality and think about reality. There's the rise of magic and astrology and tarot in everyday life and just everyday conversation. There's the use of psychedelic plants and funguses and animal secretions that are meant to have spiritual properties, or we're told that they do. There's the abandonment of religion in search of different spiritual experiences. So it's not just an abandonment to atheism, but to find the true spiritual experience. There's the hope that people lay on UFO and paranormal experiences, that they will somehow shock reality. And then there's attendance to all those phenomena and how to think about them, many of which have spiritual overtones or direct spiritual content. There's, of course, the sense that something is hidden that must be known, and the resulting conspiracies. And there's spiritual branding of food and products. I mean, again, I can just go on and on. With a lot of these, you can hear that there's a blending of the spiritual with declarations of some sort of political authority or stance or positioning. The political in connection with spiritual discourse means that we're also going to have political critiques of spiritual influencers, spirituality, and spiritual paths. Sometimes those critiques will be made by worthwhile people. They'll have good points. A lot of times, most of the time, probably we'll have people attacking spiritual paths with layered political views that actually don't really make sense or apply, because they're just coming out of a resistance to the idea of spirituality in general, or they're misinformed, or it's coming from people who aren't actually in the spiritual work or spiritual development. And so they expect the person who has a spiritual worldview to hold the burden of ignorance. And it doesn't help that many spiritual influencers have pretty bad politics, and that they don't know the political worlds that they critique. So we have lots of spiritual influencers that are anti-communism, or they express bigotry against trans people without being deeply acquainted with communist theory or philosophy or socialist thought or organization or its innovations. Or, you know, they'll not know any trans people. They won't talk to trans people about their own spiritual experiences. So you see, there can be people who are really good with their politics that have no idea how to approach spirituality, yet they're critiquing it. And there are people who are making pretty dumb and baseless political assumptions, just as if it's a spiritual truth. The spiritual influencers that are doing that, which is, that's what I'm concentrating on in this episode, I call people who do that bad friends. So I call this the bad friend concept. I think of the bad friend as someone who identifies a problem, but makes escaping the problem worse by handling it poorly. And I mean this, again, specifically when it comes to spirituality. Unfortunately, almost all popular spiritual influencers are bad friends. So the bad friend is critiquing materialism, or critiquing, I don't know, big pharmaceutical companies or corporations or governments. Maybe they're critiquing consumerism and its link to materialism. But their critique is not really going beyond just sort of pointing out that there's a problem. And the solutions and the analysis they offer actually drive us deeper into the problem. I don't just mean because they have bad explanations or bad analyses. I mean because their own views are on the same level as the thing that they're critiquing. So we'll talk about that a lot more, but just to say, the bad friend is as terrible, probably more terrible at this point, than the direct enemy of spirituality altogether. No atheist needs to do anything to hurt the spiritual path anymore, because the bad friend is doing way more work on that front. A lot of times you'll see these kinds of edgelord ideas that I mentioned before with dross of the spiritual cast over them, pretending that the political view arose from the spiritual, but in fact, the spiritual is a servant to the political view that that person probably already held. This, of course, gives fuel to the people that are attacking spiritual paths. Very often, they'll hear someone talk about spiritual themes from that standpoint, the standpoint of the bad friend, and then they'll dismiss or condemn the spiritual path completely. So we're in this bind. The critics are wrong. The influencers are wrong. So the teachers on both sides can be wrong. Furthermore, people would create bad communities around these wrong and bad friend influencers. And what they'll do is something I talked about a lot on the episode of this show that kicked off 2021, episode 136, where I said that people are creating community solidarity through building walls that are impervious to critique and that create an unearned sense of innocence, where people come together with genuine love, but the sort of membrane they form around that community that they formed isn't letting anybody in or anybody out, really. And so, therefore, it's breeding falsehood and deepening the problem. Because if the whole thing about spiritual development for you is that the rest of the world cannot exist and that the other cannot exist, then there's a problem. So I'm going to talk about some forms that you see on these false paths now. The first one is about function. It's about people who are trying to make everything spiritual functional in some sort of way. I'm thinking here about my mom first. I just got a box of my mom's papers and journals and notebooks from when she found out she was going to probably die of cancer. Now, my mom was raised in a pretty religiously fundamentalist household, and she rebelled against that as she got older through philosophy and the kinds of atheism that were available then. She might have had some spiritual inclinations, but the wound of religious life, being scared that she was going to go to hell, being told that she was going to go to hell constantly, and being forced to engage in religious study that she was not really interested in or didn't believe in, stuck with her for most of her life. When she got this diagnosis, I'm finding this in her journals and her papers, she really went on this huge quest for spiritual knowledge because she was trying to use it to cure the cancer that she had. There's just pages after pages after pages in her notebooks of the things she was learning, the places she was going, and the people she was talking to. Some of it is, in my opinion, very misdirected or at least dated. Some of it seems kind of inappropriate or wrong-headed now from some of the people she learned from, but some of it is quite profound. And so I get this picture of my mother, which I already sort of had, but this really deepened it, at the end of her life as someone who was reaching for whatever kind of spiritual technique she could find to heal herself and coupling it with all kinds of alternative or complementary medicines. And she died. In a lot of ways, it feels like, even as you're going through these journals, a little bit too little, too late. Even though there was almost a mania to it, this seeking. And, of course, I'm not blaming my mom for doing this. I think she did what a lot of people in her position would do. But what I'm thinking of here is, and using her seeking at that point in her life as a kind of analogy, is the way people reach in every spiritual direction they can to see what fits, what functions, and what works based on the desire they already have, often a desperate kind of longing or a desperate desire. And it doesn't work like it didn't work for my mom. Again, I can understand this approach, obviously. But spiritual life cannot have a function in the way that we're used to things having a function. And so when you see this on the spiritual path, I just want you to think about it. It can't be put to work. Instead, everything is put to work for it. The minute we try to make spirituality do something for us is the moment we fall back into the world of function, which is a materialistic impulse. So we lose a lot of what we think we're gaining when we're trying to get our political bearings based on spirituality instead of trying to engage with spiritual development on its own terms. This can maybe bring up a question for you. Can spirituality do anything, or is it just a thin veil thrown across everyday life that doesn't actually really do anything but decorate stuff? The answer to both of those questions is yes, sometimes, and I'll talk about that more as we go, but I'm going to move on to the next bad form here, the next thing that you often see associated with the bad friend especially has to do with health. And we can think about this in terms of spiritual health influencers. I'm sure you've seen this as I have. A lot of health podcasts and websites and someone talking about how we have a materialistic view of the body and then trying to counter that by offering some sort of more spiritual alternative version of things. First, I mean, there's a problem where if the gesture is the same, then it's not really spiritual. What do I mean by that? If someone's saying, I'm just going to give you vitamin C instead of you taking a pill, there, that's more spiritual. Well, you're still taking the pill. So the gesture is sort of the same. Or if someone's diagnosing you with Western illnesses while they say they're working in an Eastern modality, for example, I think I told the story of this once before on the show where I had an acupuncturist in San Francisco tell me through pulse diagnosis that I had HIV and she was going to cure me with acupuncture. Now, when I went and got tested then, because I obviously got a little freaked out, I discovered that I was HIV negative. But the point is not whether or not I was positive or negative so much as is to say, if I wanted that kind of diagnosis, I would have turned to Western medicine. She wasn't actually engaging with Eastern medicine. She was using Eastern medicine to just sort of be an accoutrement to the understanding that allopathic doctors could already offer me and probably offer me better. So there's that. But I'm actually talking about something a little different here. The focusing on health and wellness when it comes to the bad friend is taking the form a lot lately, of course, about vaccines and about how we're all being duped and all that sort of stuff. And so there's this hidden conflation of illness and treatment as moral signifiers. There are, of course, moral contours to disease, I think. We can make ourselves sick or we can help ourselves become healthy, but those are to be understood through a person's own individuated encounter with their karma, not through whether or not the person is healthy by a certain measure or sick by a certain measure, and then judging, well, you're sick, so you must be morally screwed up, or you're healthy, so you must be morally great. And also, is health an overall picture of the human being, or is it just about what's happening with them physically? I'm going to spend a little more time on this one because I think I'm still kind of skirting the surface of what I'm talking about here. What we need to ask when we're listening to people who are talking about spirituality and how it relates to health is it merely about health? Let me talk about that for a little bit. I was listening to a podcast with two people that I have liked in the past and had had conversations with one of them talk about all the challenges we're facing with our health right now. And of course, as these conversations go, it started weaving itself into government control and vaccines and so on and so forth. And the person started talking about Rudolf Steiner, one of the people. And he kept saying, arm on this and arm on that. Now, I'm not going to get into all of that for you, but some of Rudolf Steiner's stuff has become buzzwords for alternative health practitioners, fitness gurus, and so forth, who, even though they might be the best in their field when it comes to fitness or supplements or something, are bad friends when it comes to anthroposophy and Western occultism. The small amount of information that this person had and their poor interpretation led them to keep talking about the health effects of these bad spiritual beings. And while there were some aspects or scraps in there that were true, it was never really thinking about the fact that someone can be spiritually developing on a very deep level and be sick, and perhaps be sick for their entire lives. Or they can have beautifully fit bodies and be ill. And I don't just mean mentally ill in either of those cases. I mean that those people can be completely off the path. I can think of certainly times in my life where I was in a state of crisis and I had six-pack abs, versus times when I was really deepening my encounter with my spiritual life. Of course, it would be great to have a lot of things lined up at once, but that's not really how it works. Spiritual life does not progress in this sort of linear way, and I'll talk about that a little bit more as we go as well. Furthermore, does death come into the picture at all for most of these people? In fact, they're often echoing the same public health messages that they pretend or believe themselves to be countering, which is survival at any cost. It does not matter what your life is like, the quality of your life is like. That's often the message from these health influencers, is that public health doesn't really care about how we live, only keeping us alive for whatever reason. But that's also what they're saying. They don't care about our connection with death or the realm of the dead. And so the idea is to be healthy and to stay alive at any cost, and to mark health by certain signifiers which they see as healthy, which may have nothing to do with the spiritual life of that person. So the bad friend when it comes to health is quite pernicious, because they can give great advice on how to work out and eat paleo or whatever. And because you can get results on that level in a way that's really observable, and that might even affect your mood and so on and so forth, what if you did that and it eclipsed your spiritual life? What if you did that and it sent you down a path of a certain kind of vanity? Again, this is something that I've experienced firsthand, and I'm not condemning myself for having those experiences, but I do now have things that I watch out for, and I can hear them in the voices of many of these bad friends that are spiritual health influencers. And along with all of that, a lot of people who do health influencing also reach for materialistic spiritual techniques. So this is another aspect of a false path, the bad friend. I've talked about this a lot on the show, where materialism can't be the path that we take to deepen our inner development. Materialism, in this case, relies on substances and acts in the physical, material world to lead us into the spiritual plane. Now, I know you might be thinking, well, aren't we embodied? Doesn't the body matter? Doesn't nature matter? All of that. It does, but it matters in so much as we begin to perceive the spiritual truth about the body, about natural phenomena, and so on and so forth. when we do hallucinogenic drugs, for example, which is something that a lot of these spiritual health influencers advocate for, it can drive us much deeper into our commitment to and relationship with the material world and the physical illusory aspects of matter. And when we do magic, we're generally commanding that spiritual world to have material effects, which again loops us back into commitment to materialism. Magic is, you know, when we say, wow, spiritual beings are real, spiritual power is real, and I'm going to control it to get what I want. And I want to say all magic works this way. It's not just some of the magic that we hear about with the Goetia or whatever, because the fundamental nature of the spiritual makeup of the world is how magic makes things happen. I talk about this at length with Daniel Joseph and Aki Toshimitsu and Lisa Romero and Ari Torsen on different episodes. So I'm not going to go into it that much now. And I want to say that I'm not saying there's no appropriate way, that there's no appropriate way to use magic or hallucinogenic drugs, but the passageway to do that, to get into spiritual development, is very, very narrow at this point. I hope to maybe do a future episode on the correct use of magic, as if I'm the authority on that, but to talk with someone who is a real authority on that, and I think I've got a good idea, but it's good to note that it is not appropriately used. And what's available out there on using it is not really that good. Okay, and so now we're going to get into the sort of more obvious, I suppose, times when people are bad friends to spiritual paths, and that's through conspiracy theories and fractal noia. First, I'll bring up fractal noia. They're deeply tied into each other, but fractal noia is a term that is used by Doug Rushkoff, who's been on the show many times, which is the rampant effort to impose an interpretation of one set of facts on another dissimilar set of facts. Let me explain what I mean by this and what I don't mean. You know, people are peering into the world, especially with a spiritual lens, and seeing patterns everywhere. Seeing patterns isn't bad exactly. But what's happening with the fractal noia is that it's standing in for being able to be morally responding to patterns. So think about the famous video of the woman who's talking about how you can see Satan's Satan's marks all over Monster energy drink. Or maybe someone linking the Barbie movie to human or child sacrifice. In general, those people are trying to demonstrate their access to a deeper way of seeing, which really just amounts to an intellectual superiority or kind of moral innocence, or disconnection from the realms of people who are responsible for what they see, like devil energy drinks or human sacrificing movies about dolls, through their ability to spot patterns. This is a moral failure. The longing to see has overtaken their development. The longing to find coherence means that they've agitated a desire so much within themselves that it's blocking out the possibility for change. All that can happen is the staying close to that desire, which then begins to perceive for them. This is really a distortion of the law of correspondences, which is all about how, you know, different metals and different colors correspond to different angels and spiritual states and moods and so on and so forth. The fractal noia that Doug presents, where the linking of images is more important than understanding the ways images interact with individuals, is just a klutzy alchemy that ends up holding the status quo in place because it actually blocks development. Conspiracy theories are in some ways a variety of fractal noia, but they take things a little further. So conspiracy theories are almost never spiritual. Sometimes they'll have a spiritual angle, and sometimes they'll have some truth in them. But they're almost never spiritual because they simply express materialistic elements in materialistic ways. And this includes the theories that reference spiritual beings. If I go back to my health influencer pals who are talking about Ahriman or whatever, they're just using the names of spiritual beings as placeholders in conspiracy theories that could be anything else. Lucifer and Ahriman take the place of the Illuminati, and the Christ consciousness takes the place of, I don't know, the great American people or whatever. Conspiracy theories focus on the material world. So they're simply shuffling around the power dynamic and not seeing through power itself. So that is not a spiritual path. Getting away from the materialistic entrappings of conspiracy theory and into real inner and spiritual development is what's important here. The bad friend uses spirituality to create QAnon and obsess over satanic ritual abuse and so on and so forth in ways that are so connected between, you know, the points they've put on the map and the panicked Charlie Day threads between all of them without moral development that it ends up having bad moral results. So we can see the ways that QAnon and the child trafficking, satanic ritual abuse stuff has flowed right into the cesspool of groomer panic and laws against drag queens and so on and so forth. Because without moral development, we can't actually even look at the potential truth of any ritual abuse or whatever properly. We end up making things worse. We end up crowding the field with all these fake cries of ritual abuse, of human trafficking, and so on and so forth. And then we can't even save the people who have been actually affected by those sorts of things. This is something I learned really quickly as a sex workers' rights activist, because in the US, for example, all the numbers about trafficking and sex trafficking are insanely inflated because prostitution, sex work is illegal. And those numbers of arrests of consensual sex workers are lumped into sex trafficking and human trafficking numbers. So conspiracy theory, which thinks it's getting to the real spiritual truth of things, is so often leading us into even worse materialistic actions, sometimes an amplification of the very problem that those people are trying to solve or address. And there's such a flip side to that in real spiritual paths, but we'll talk about that a little later. I also want to say something else about fractal noia and the way it creates bad solutions when people are trying to do spiritual work. It can end up taking really schematic approaches to spirituality. We can see this in a lot of integral study stuff. I know I said I wasn't going to name anybody, but I think Ken Wilber has enough money that it's fine if I name what he's doing. A lot of these super encyclopedia type approaches to spirituality where you do this and do this and do this and do this, and everything is sort of laid out almost as if it can be graphed. Those often relate to, one, the bad friend health influencer, because a lot of times they use that approach, and two, the fractal noiac approach where everything has to be connected in some sort of neatly outlined way. That's a holdover from an old kind of magic, which shows all the ingredients and rituals and moves and everything have to be all set up in a very specific way. Almost everybody involved in these false forms that we find on false spiritual paths, they try to position themselves as, I'll borrow a term from psychoanalysis, the subject's supposed to know. Now, no one is supposed to be the subject supposed to know in psychoanalysis. What the term means is when you go in and see your analyst, you have a concept that that person knows more than you, and that concept helps you heal. But the analyst knows that you're going to be projecting that onto them and can try to use it to help you, but they would never pretend, if they were not just engaging in total malpractice or whatever, they would never pretend that it were actually true. They would just notice that that was something in the relationship. A lot of times spiritual influencers will really assume that position. We call it all sorts of things, you know, the guru or, you know, charismatic leader or whatever, but I don't think we have to go that far. I think those are pretty extreme versions of what we're seeing. What we're seeing instead, and why I'm saying the subject's supposed to know that someone's assuming that position, is they're presenting things with certainty without the expression of where the certainty comes from. So often they'll say things like, well, I've checked into my soul, or something like that. Well, that's fine for that person. I think you can check into your soul and it can give you real information. But that leaves me, as the person who's listening, in the position of just accepting the authority of your soul, which is a terrible place to put me in and totally limiting to my own freedom. These people are playing on the lack of clarity that is part of spiritual development. So I'm sure you've probably felt this way. A lot of times when you have what you would refer to as a spiritual experience, it was kind of a feeling that you've had, or a notion, or a hunch. And honestly, it's almost indiscernible from everyday experience, and it's still laden with a lot of doubt. And when you do have that direct, undeniable experience that's as clear as day, that fills you with a sort of new light or clarity, you might have trouble conveying that to others, other than just expecting them to believe what you said. Authority figures, the bad friends, they present their experiences as all undeniable, and then they retreat into authority to get you to accept it. And why I'm making a distinction between them and gurus and charismatic leaders and all that is that they might really be having these experiences. Often they aren't, but they might be. But the only way they can convey it to you is to get you to go along with them and believe in them so they can present all the other stuff. And it's all kind of smoothed out, like the undeniable experiences that they've had, which they've demanded you accept, which is not fair to begin with, are just blended in with the things that they're speculating about, and they also expect you to buy into, and are also presented with certainty. So that's actually a lie. And all of that is extremely limiting. Another feature of subjects supposed to know is that a lot of times people, these bad friend influencers, they'll learn something and they'll want to immediately express it before it has actually become theirs through real digestion of it or encounter with it. Again, this is something that we all do. We hear a cool fact and we want to just tell somebody, or we read some part of a lecture like that supplement guy has done, and you take it in and then you just spit it out right away without really understanding what it means. But it comes with a sort of false certainty, and it comes with a decision to occupy that place of the subject supposed to know. This is the way in which certainty blocks that teacher, that bad friend, from developing. And then they ask us, you, me, others, as they've probably been asked themselves at some point, to join them on the path of non-development. Okay, we're going to keep going, because something else that people in that position often do is relate to time in the completely wrong way. One of the ways they do that is they offer prophecy. Sometimes they'll just say, oh, it's just prediction, but really they're giving prophecy. It's not just prediction like, oh, maybe this stock will go up tomorrow or something like that. It's like the global markets are going to crash and this thing is going to happen and we're all going to live in these food shortages and these countries are going to go to war and so on and so forth. This is so appealing to us right now because so many of us are catastrophizing. Catastrophizing, as I'm sure you've done, I've done it. Maybe you haven't, and if you haven't, God bless you. But catastrophizing is seizing time inappropriately. It's the way we move to something we've imagined. What do I mean by that? So it's like I imagine some terrible future. Let's say I have some weird pain somewhere in my body and I'm like, oh my gosh, that means I'm going to die of this thing. And I start getting images of it and I start moving toward the fixed image that I have of the future. Very often, catastrophizing is extremely paralyzing. I don't need to keep telling you what catastrophizing is because I'm sure you've done it with world events and in your own life. But prophecies work the same way, except they're using spiritual principles. So people who prophesize anything are usually informed by beings that are doing the work of evil in time. Now, what do I mean by that? And how can I even assert something like that? The messages that are given to a prophet, for the most part, from the future are fixed points. So this is what's coming. This is what's happening. When you fix a point, you're saying that people's freedom, options, and their ability to direct things, to feel and to act and to think with purity, purposefulness, and intention are not applicable. That actually just this one thing is happening. So what's happening is an alliance between the prophet and whatever is giving the prophet that image to fix a point in time to limit people's freedom. This is why prophecies are generally so terrible, by the way. It's why people often just have bad visions of the future and not good ones, and also why we should be wary of anyone who prophesizes anything. Even if the rest of their output seems acceptable, their predictions are indicating an alliance with a bad source and utilizing a bad impulse. I think there can be visions of the future, for sure, that can be beautiful, but those visions often, or always, if they're good, leave a lot of room for failure, new direction, new possibility, and so on and so forth. Not something that's completely determined. The other way that the bad friend will work is accessing the desire to go back. Back in time. So this includes views of what is old is what is right, that we need to get back. A lot of times these views are grafted onto indigenous spirituality without ever asking indigenous practitioners who are alive now what is needed or how those traditions have changed or how those views have changed over time. It's trying to lock indigenous people in time so that we can pretend there's some sort of secret indigenous panic room that, you know, Western settler colonial people can escape into. This can't help us anymore. And in fact, why wouldn't it be that because something's old, it might have been intercepted and invaded many, many times over the years, as if it's somehow completely impenetrable? When we see traditions that are changing, that are moving and living, then we get a different picture. And that's not about going back or things being old. And by the way, that's also why people that have these views of the old spirituality, they can be fascist sometimes, because the fascist impulse is always to imagine that idealized perfect time and to get back to it somehow, to get back to the essential perfect moment. And that can include old gods who aren't existing in new forms or living in new forms or old ways and so on and so forth. Okay. Look, what are we? We're like almost an hour in, and you're probably thinking, Connor, what is even left? What could a true path be? So I'm going to go through some of that now. First, I want to say A true path always includes refining your character. There's a saying from anthroposophy, which is, for every step you gain in occult knowledge, take 3 steps in refining the character, in making your personality more loving and more compassionate. This is so important because occult knowledge, spiritual knowledge, can be really shattering and challenging. And as we're going through that, it can seem like it's offering us power. And to the extent that we're not developing our character, that we're not becoming more loving and compassionate and warm, we're going to have a lot of trouble dealing with that. So I just want to put that out there first. And also, I think it helps us separate out that spiritual development and self-development are 2 different things. They overlap and they're really helpful and supportive to each other. But a lot of the bad friend people are peddling self-development, but that's not spiritual development. Spiritual development is, well, what I'm going to talk about now with all these instances of the true path. But self-development is about developing, you know, this kindness in relation to the other, this dedication to your own imagination and your dreams, all the kinds of stuff that responsible new age people will talk about, that can really be, or positive thinking people, that can really be self-development, but that's not spiritual development. One bridge between the two is warmth. Warmth is a virtue now. Warmth really matters. And by warmth, I mean that feeling that you have when you're regarding someone or something with love. If you're having trouble offering that to people, understand what it's like when you look at, I don't know, your cat or some dolphin babies or something like that. You can feel real warmth. That warmth is a warmth that's coming through you. So when you think about that, that is a spiritual capacity, a true one. If you see someone who's crying and you go to them and you sit with them and you comfort them and they hear you and they receive your comfort and you can see that some of the burden has been relieved, that same comfort is the warmth that is given to you by the spiritual world. So it comes through you. So also it's important to not egotistically, obviously, take on how great you were in that moment at supporting that person, but rather to see the comfort that comes through you is also the comfort that comes from the spiritual world. It is that warmth within. An aspect of a true spiritual path is that it includes the dead. One reason why is that this provides an antidote to the fear of health issues. We see people constantly talking about compelled health mandates in materialistic ways, but in what way does this put us out of touch with the dead, right? That struggle to just be alive. Actually, when we become closer to the dead, we experience their healing presence because they are part of the true spiritual world and the true spiritual path, which is always ultimately healing for an aspect of ourselves. It might not heal every single thing about us, but is healing in some ways. So we include the dead in our understanding, and that includes our own death. And bringing reincarnation in, our own dead selves. On episode 150, which is called The Spiritual Politics of the Dead, I talk about all of that, and as well as what happens when you die. And then on episode 176, I speak about how to live using reincarnation and what happens with reincarnation as well, and how that can affect our view of things once we bring it in, even in just a conceptual way. But the dead must be part of the spiritual path, not merely in some glib way, and again, not in a functional way. I think this is one of the problems when people are doing ancestor work. I'm not saying that that's all bad work, but just to keep in mind that we don't merely command and use the dead for what we want when we want them, which is what happens sometimes, again, not all the times. It's through an understanding of the presence of the dead and the in-between worlds, between dying and being born again. The fear of death has no place in spiritual understanding. Easier said than done. I know. And we also can't be glib or merely defiant about death either. A lot of people talk about how I'm not afraid of dying or whatever, but like they really are, and they're not really considering it, and they don't really know what's going to happen when they die and all that kind of stuff. So that really matters. As a counter to the certainty that people present, but say on a true spiritual path, you'll have in mind that your life is your spiritual text, and the world is always offering inroads, portals, and paths into the mystery school of being. I know in some ways we all submit to knowing that others know more than us. I mean, when we engage, when we listen, when we read, we're always thinking, okay, you know, even the decision to just buy a book or to listen to this podcast, we think, oh, maybe that person knows something that I don't. But it's up to you, because your life is your sacred text and your being is the mystery school. The question is, how do you develop the ability to distinguish what's true and what's not when you look upon your life? And the way you do that is by engaging with purification. Ooh, purification is a very unpopular term, and even now purity culture and all that sort of stuff. I don't mean it in any way like that at all. What I mean is purifying you to be who you are in relationship to your destiny. I'll talk about destiny in a second, but it's not about purification for the sake of lining up with a religious dogma. Here's a prayer that I really love that I read before on the show with David Lorimer when we were talking about spiritual teacher Peter Dunov. Cleanse me, my God. Purify me inwardly and outwardly. Purify body, soul, and spirit so that the seeds of light may grow within me and make me into a flaming torch. I should like to be my own flame so as to transform everything in and around me into light. So, amen. So maybe that works for you and maybe it doesn't. But that's something that I find is helpful to align me. Also, perfection and non-perfection, this is the destiny part. As we start to purify, we'll notice, because purification is possible, that there are parts of us that are not perfect. This is something that we need to be on guard for. My destiny is perfect. In other words, who I can be when I live out my karma is perfect, but I am not. And this runs counter to a lot of things that people think. And also the ways that people get really locked into over-identifying with being right, the need to be right, as if being imperfect is terrible. There is a part of you that is perfect, and it's your destiny. It's your heart. And I think, you know, without just getting you to believe me on that point, a lot of us at least teeter back and forth on that understanding. Everything is perfect. Oh, no, I could do better. No, everything is perfect. No, I could do better. Both are true. It's making sure you work on the right one, not trying to change the perfect part, but looking and being honest with yourself about which aspects you can change and which aspects you can work on. When it comes to conspiracy, the inverse of that, the true path, is understanding that everything is connected. In the spiritual world, we are all connected. As we work our way through these crises, we work our way through for all humanity. And we are all working our way through. We're all going through it together. And that means rather than creating and demonizing groups or even spiritual beings or whatever, we must always be fighting for those who fight against us. More than that, we're not even necessarily fighting. We must always be creating for those who are fighting against us. It means creating a world where we can all live out our karma. Not a new world order, but generating from our cooperative agreement, love, and so forth on freedom and compassion. A world that allows everyone to thrive, to encounter truth, love, wisdom, goodness, and righteousness. Beauty and art are part of the true spiritual path. Both are appropriate expressions of the spiritual world in material form. So while some of the things I talked about before were kind of misdirecting, pretending to be spiritual, but actually really just driving us deeper into materialism, beauty and art, especially artistic expression, is a way in which you can bring the spiritual into the material world. And that includes in ugly forms, in frightful forms, in sexual forms, and more forms than you can imagine. All art, and you know when you see art that has that quality to it, that it's really bringing forth what is spiritual. All art does it, but some does it with the kind of promise and strength of the initiate or the adept or whatever word you want to use. The artist is someone often who has deep spiritual knowledge without knowing it. And that's why we can see it sometimes. And sometimes they do know it. Sometimes it's like the films of Terrence Malick or David Lynch or something like that. These are all aspects of true spiritual paths. Now, you might ask, am I just pretending to be the guru here? Am I putting myself in the position of subject supposed to know? And I think it's a great question, and I think it's worth asking. And I think some people might use some of the points I made here to bolster their own spiritual influence on others. Connor brought up this point, and that is exactly why my spiritual version of things is so correct, and you should listen to me. I realize I'm now just like making this episode completely unquotable because you're screwed if you listen to it or screwed if you don't listen to it, but that's okay. It's difficult. We have to be vigilant. We can often lose sight of whether or not we are trying to command and control people just to get, you know, our point across, to feel safer, to have people who believe in us, to have fake communities that are insular and not really helping the world. There's all sorts of things like that. And we can critique other people's spiritual lives too, because we feel jealous of where they are in the world, of how well they're doing or how many followers they've amassed or whatever. And there's so many nonsense battles between people who have spiritual inclinations over stuff like all of this. Well, that person's peddling bullshit, and no, I'm the one who's got the real truth, and you know, this person said this, you know, a few years ago, and I've never forgotten it, so they must be a fascist or what, I don't know. You know these things. You know how they go. And a lot of that is because people identify their value with what they have to say about spirituality. But the spiritual world and the spiritual life is for all of us to discover. Rudolf Steiner said two things that I will bring up here. One is, he said, kind of exasperated once to an audience, he said, "I don't want you to believe in me. I want you to understand me." And the other is, whenever you see evil, you should look into your own soul and ask yourself, why am I not yet able to recognize the good in this evil that confronts me? And that's true of world problems, but it's also true of bad spiritual paths, bad friends, false spiritual forms, and false spiritual pathways. They all offer something. And so, even in all of this, I don't want to condemn anybody for being on a path like that. Because there's something in it that is being offered, that has value and that has strength. But the trick is, I think, is to go to yourself and say, am I really being honest here with myself? What am I saying I know that I don't really know? What am I presenting with certainty that I'm not really certain about? What am I, is just a feeling, but I'm presenting it as if I've had an undeniable experience. All of that matters. And when do I feel warmth and love? And when do I not? And when I don't, why can't I? What's going on there? When am I willing to give something up, sacrifice, purify for the spiritual path that I'm on? If not, if I'm not willing to give something up, if I'm not, why not? Do I fear what will happen if it's taken from me? Do I not trust the spiritual world to not take it from me? Am I not really on my path, and so it must be taken from me to get me back on my path, and that's what I'm afraid of? There are all sorts of questions you can ask yourself, but only you can really ask yourself those questions. And so that's my best shot at not being the guru. I'm sure I slip up all the time. Thanks for listening to this episode. I hope it's clarifying in the morass of and mire of spiritual options and podcasts and influencers and advice. And so much of it, most of it is bad. I haven't done a solo episode like this since last year I did on the spiritual life of horror. I sit down, I write these episodes and spend time with them. So now here at the end of the show is my appeal to you to sign up for Patreon and support the show. Patreon.com/ConorHabib. If what I've said has value and meaning for you, that's a great way to get connected and involved with the show. Because although I'm happy to be hired to help people with their life goals and artistic endeavors and so on and so forth, what I don't want to do is begin to clutter this show up with sponsors or getting paid to make an episode that's 2 hours long or have this guest on or make sure we talk about this topic. I do this show out of what is interesting to me, what I think is necessary in the world, and what I think I genuinely have to offer to you, the listeners, to myself, to the guests that are on the show, and, well, to everybody. So, patreon.com/ConorHabib. That's all. Good luck to you on your path, and more next time. Bye.